Welcome to Zyma, guys.
Ahoy, hoy.
We are Bob and Larry.
Mm-hmm.
And we're here to talk to you about some of the strangest stories of beer and fermentation throughout history. You can find us on all of your favourite podcasting platforms, as well as all social media, good and bad, at Zyma Guys Pod. This is episode 31, The Drunk Monkeys of St. Kitts. Since you and I are mutual followers on Instagram, naturally.
For sure.
One
might say our feeds have synced.
Our feeds have synced.
It's the, you know, the millennial, middle-aged, best buddies synchronization.
Well, yes. And I guess they have, because exactly what I'm going to talk about is that some of these things come back around, and a meme that you sent me a month ago, I generally send you again.
Yeah, but and that usually that a month later, because I'm so far ahead of the curve.
I know, but it is cyclical. But I do get to see when you're bored, because I get an influx of dank memes and funny reels.
I've been really trying to cut back on the instant gratification 5, 10, 30 second videos.
The infinite reel.
The infinite reel. This is exactly something for the last couple of weeks now I've been trying to cut back, and I allow myself an hour window or 45 minute
That's
window.
That's still a lot of time.
Okay, let's rephrase
That's cutting back?
Well, I allow myself, I don't fucking know how big the window is, but it's much smaller than before. And I'm trying to focus more on reading books, which I've done successfully for the last couple of weeks and have finished 3 books. I try to focus more on long form storytelling type of things instead of going for the
things that only hold your attention for 10 seconds at a time, 12 seconds at a time.
Yeah. I've been trying my hardest to work up the attention span again.
Well, I mean, there are also those ones that go for a frustratingly long time where it's just a woman making the world's worst mac and cheese.
I mean,
do you ever angrily watch them all the way to the end?
I angrily watch so many things. Most of my watching is angry.
They know exactly what they're doing, those women and their mac and cheese. No one in their right mind is putting all of the things that they're putting in that mac and cheese.
I feel
you're doing it in the worst possible way.
I feel like you're very much talking about one oddly specific video that really pissed you off.
No. There are so many of these.
Well, I actually have to pedal back on what I said earlier. Guess our feeds have not synchronized.
Oh, okay. I'll start sending you a few so it pops up in your algorithm a lot more.
It sounds horrible.
If only they
were fermenting mac and cheese abuse.
If they were fermenting something, I could do an episode on them, but it's just terrible mac and cheese, so I don't
suppose the mac and cheese is so horrible that no one will eat it,
ferment.
Yes.
It might start to fill with cheese flies and maggots.
Yeah.
And become a delicacy in the end.
Yeah. Maybe these ladies are onto something, that we just haven't given it enough time because of our 10-second attention spans.
Yeah, and I guess that brain rot is really setting in, because even when I sit down to watch some more long-form entertainment or entertainment classic, I generally just go back to those
entertainment.
Same 5 episodes of The Simpsons that I've been watching for the past 20 years.
Well, that is a whole different kind of mental illness.
Yeah. But I'm sorry that you are trying to limit your time on this, but I'm gonna bring us back to it anyway, because essentially how I arrived at today's story was just by going on the internet and typing in drunk animals.
That's a search term that I've used far too many times, far too many times that I care to admit.
Well, tell me about it. What did you find in your search for drunk animals?
I have witnessed all kinds of animals getting off their heads.
Mm-hmm.
There's one video that instantly pops into my mind. I think it was 2019 when it happened. Elephants that got extremely hammered, and they.
It's really funny because I have also a story for this, but I'm curious because I know that there are multiple stories, so I want to know which one you're talking about.
Oh, there's gotta be so many. Luckily, or I don't know if it's a good thing that everyone in the world has a smartphone, even in extremely rural India where people cohabitate the land with
elephants,
and they live in huts that I presume are made of elephant dung, and then they leave out some rice beer. Elephants get absolutely hammered, smash down a bunch of these houses, and then the people are taking videos of that.
That's right. I believe the one you're talking about, it was about 50 elephants.
Yeah.
And it was an absolute rampage.
But you can tell that none of these elephants is in their correct state of mind.
Yeah.
They look different. Like, I mean, there's something about the eyes of those elephants that...
They've got the craziest look in their eye.
They got the crazy eyes. They got the gin eyes, you know?
I mean, this isn't even an isolated incident.
I would not want to cross any of those elephants in the alley behind the bar. You know, shit's gonna happen.
Because they've already destroyed the bar and the alley.
And funnily enough, a couple of China shops that absolutely had nothing to do with it, and they went out of their way to destroy those. But you know, those elephants are gonna come up to you and say, like, you got any cocaine on you? You don't. So it leads to a fight. And if you did, they would snort it all.
Yeah, you don't want to share your cocaine with an elephant.
I mean, I never have cocaine, and I'm not a cocaine guy.
Can you imagine how much they would need?
But aren't their brains kind of small, though?
Yeah, but their nose is huge.
Their nose is huge, yeah. But also very sensitive.
It's like goes into the mucus in the first foot of nose and never makes it all the way to the top.
That's true.
But this isn't even an isolated incident, because while I did research the specific topic that you were talking about, there's also another one where in the same region,
mm-hmm.
there's another 24 elephants, and they drink mahua.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an Indian native spirit made from a mahua fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like 45%.
Oof.
So these elephants drank about 500 liters of straight spirit.
Oh, boy.
These ones didn't go on a rampage. I think they were a lot more docile given how wasted they must have been.
See, that's probably why they were too wasted.
Yeah, and so they basically just blocked all the streets and roads by passing out. And nice. It took the local authorities to come along with a bunch of drums to wake them up.
That's awesome.
And pour these, shoo these poor old elephants back into the
By this time, presumably hungover.
Hungover as hell.
But I've also seen videos of a Swedish moose fighting a Volvo, because the moose had eaten too many overripe and already fermenting apples.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen videos of birds, and if I'm not mistaken, robins that had eaten some fermented fruit and were flying into everything.
Yep.
Fermented berries. I've seen videos of squirrels and raccoons. Raccoons drunk are freaking awesome.
Oh, they must be cool.
Raccoons, I feel like, are one of the two species of animals that, you know, stumbled upon it by accident and then started searching for the next high. I feel raccoons and monkeys are going to be the ones
into it.
Yeah, that are not only into it, but, you know, after a while, you know, they get into the fentanyl, and then they're already standing with the corner. They got gateway drugs, and the fermented berries were just the first step of the gateway drugs, and they're going to smoke their way up the crack chain and start enterprising as well. I've seen bears. I've seen pigs.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen deer. I've seen a dog get drunk in real life.
Oh, really?
A childhood friend of mine had a really stupid yappy poodle,
mm-hmm.
and their parents took great delight in putting a shot of vodka in the water of the yappy poodle.
All right.
And he would go to town on it and then stumble into everything, then have a 5-minute very aggressive cycle, and then just pass out.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's super duper bad for dogs.
I'm pretty sure it's super duper bad. I think some PETA people are going to like hit me up for context to these people.
Who are they?
But I will just like put out the caution on this, that this was like the early 90s and people
back when that sort of stuff flew.
Yeah,
I mean
I don't know if it flew.
I remember being a kid and seeing like all manner of older Australian men pouring beers down dogs' throats at barbecues. That was like, oh, you know, the dog would come up on the hind paws and lap away at a VB.
Oh, so something I remember from like 30 years ago as like a bit of a traumatic event in my life that I witnessed this is just something that you saw at barbecues all the time. Okay.
That was cool. Just a regular satay in Australia.
Cool. I'll dial back my bleeding heart a little bit then.
Well, these incidents, they all vary. You mentioned that you figured a raccoon would try it once and go back for it. So
pretty sure. A raccoon with a crack pipe happening like in a week.
These are surprisingly common throughout the entire animal world, and it does vary from, as you said, like animals getting into fruit that they shouldn't, or as the elephants did, getting into human alcoholic beverages that they shouldn't, but then also animals who do seek these things out and become intoxicated intentionally.
See, this is something that I have actually given quite a bit of thought to previously, because I always, initially I thought like this type of behavior is intrinsically human. Mm-hmm. Then it turns out that every living creature in nature, more or less, I mean, it wasn't an exhaustive list of animals posted, but I've never heard of fish getting shit-faced, but everything else, including like birds, every other kind of, let's say mammals at the very least, have a tendency and a proclivity towards getting hammered.
Now I'm just trying to think under what circumstances a fish could. You just have to put it in beer.
See, but this leads me to a whole other thing, is am I too mammal-centric here?
Yeah.
Because people attribute all kinds of like characteristics to plants and fungi and whatnot. We are magic mushrooms just doing it on their own behalf? Is cannabis like...
They're just high. Doing magic it. Mushrooms are just high all the time.
They're just like these like happy little
Super Mario fungus.
Yeah. These little fungi that are the fun guys.
And then a moose comes along and eats them and then goes on a mad trip.
And then the moose is happy. Huh?
It's the circle of life.
It's the circle of life.
I mean, lions, wallabies I had written down as well. Bees. Jeez. Getting drunk from nectar is apparently quite common.
Then there's also the bees that make the mad honey, the one that stuff psychedelic.
Yeah, so they eat hallucinogens and then like the what like they produce.
Devil's trumpet or some kind of plant like that.
Yeah, right.
Hallucinogenic plants, and then the honey is like a crazy strong hallucinogenic substance.
Right.
I've seen videos, and I'm certain I've sent you a reel of actually that as well, of guys in South Africa harvesting that stuff. And it's like they dangle from the mountainside while tens of thousands of bees attack them.
Right.
And then they get these huge things of stuff that they then sell to Joe Rogan for like $500 a gram.
Why do I imagine this honey being Technicolor? It's like, oh,
it would be dope.
Well, apparently the behavior is actually like observable by other bees as well. And bees have been observed basically
getting into fist fights.
Bee bouncers blocking the doors to the hive of bees who come back off of drunk off of fermented nectar. We'll put them in cool out. Like you stay outside until you
go and sleep it off.
Yeah, go sleep it off, and then you can come back to the hive.
Oh wow!
There's also a South American tropical fruit bat, which I wanted to specifically mention because they also get drunk off of fermented fruits. But apparently these guys have an insanely high alcohol tolerance, and they can continue to fly and echolocate properly up to a blood alcohol content of 0.3.
See, those are like, you know, the seasoned drunk drivers that are like, oh, I drive my best after half a pint of whiskey. You know, the old fellas that justify them driving drunk is, well, I've always because done it.
Yeah.
Well, that's I'm pretty sure I had, last time I went to Tartu, I had a bus driver like that.
Oh.
He smelled of, reeked of booze, but he drove really well and fast. And damn near no one died.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
He kept the casualties to a minimum.
Yeah.
But yes, you are...
relative minimum.
You are right. There are monkeys, of course, who do come back for alcohol, having had a taste. So the drunk animals that I want to focus on today live on the island of St. Kitts. You know of St. Kitts?
Not much. So, basically just the name.
You know the name? So it's an island in the Caribbean.
Thought so.
Yeah, and it's a federation of two islands. It's actually St. Kitts and Nevis. But okay. The island that we're going to focus on is St. Kitts.
Is one of the islands the Fire Festival Island?
No.
It sounds very much like that.
No, that was bloody El Chapo. No, the other one. How have I forgotten his name? Narcos. Pablo Escobar. Pablo Escobar's island. Wow.
Okay, so St. Kitts and Nevis is... separate islands, but one country.
Yes.
As opposed to what's also seems to be pretty common in the Caribbean, where it's like one island, two nations. So like the, you know, Haiti and the Dominican Republic, basically.
Okay, no, this is not like that. It is two islands separated by about 3 kilometers of...
And they consider themselves to be one country, even though it's like...
Two separate communities.
Two islands. Okay, now I get it. I'm sorry to all of our potential listeners out there, but I don't really know anything about you.
Oh, yeah. But it's about the size of Muhu. That means something to you.
And, it's a small island.
It's a small island. And it's home to approximately 60,000 monkeys, which gives it a 2-to-1 ratio with the people.
Looking at Wikipedia here, it says that they have about 54,000 people.
54,000.
So it's more or less a 1-to-1 ratio with the monkeys.
Ah, but maybe that's St. Kitts and Nevis.
Yes,
it there is. You go. I believe St. Kitts itself was about 30,000 people.
All right. Excuse me then.
Yeah, and it...
You are right. Their population is estimated at 35,000.
Yeah. And I do want to very much drive the point home that these monkeys are on St. Kitts. This is a very isolated community of monkeys. It does not spread to the other island. Okay. They don't make it across that 3-kilometer stretch of water.
They haven't gone for the most epic beer run ever.
No, but they will have some epic beer runs. So... these are the vervet monkeys. They're not native to St. Kitts. They've been brought over from East Africa, and they're pretty damaging to the natural native ecosystem. They're pretty damaging to agriculture. They're actually like a really big pest on the island, with so many of them on such a small island.
As monkeys often tend to be in pests. Places so where their numbers kind of like grow too rapidly. Like yeah. In a lot of Asian countries, I would say.
As they're, and they descend on places where humans live and cause exactly. A lot of mischief and problems. I mean, these guys will eat anything. They rip up watermelons, mangoes, like yams, cassava. They've even been known to chow down on Scotch bonnets unfazed.
That's like us.
Yeah.
The monkeys really are just like just us. Just like us.
So I'm going to dive in a little bit to the history of cane sugar on St. Kitts, because it is very relevant to the story of the monkeys. So in the early 1600s, we see the arrival of French and English colonists. this is pretty much where the monkeys are brought in. A lot of these guys have been to Africa, and a lot of sailors and kind of wealthy overseers have just taken monkeys as pets.
I wonder if it's already in like the Columbus expedition era, because he made it out to St. Kitts pretty early on as well in 1493, Wikipedia tells me.
Oh, are you fact-checking me?
I am.
Well, maybe he already had some monkeys with him. They started with tobacco and cotton as the main crops, but they were pretty quickly replaced with sugarcane, because at the same time, Virginia, the American colony, or the English colony in the American continent at the time, just becomes a massive producer of tobacco and cotton.
Something that they've held on to today.
Exactly. And the shift has been made to sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a massive commodity during the era, and of course...
So sugar cane.
Sugar cane.
Mm-hmm.
And from sugar cane, they're also getting molasses and rum.
Oh, yeah.
So pretty quickly, these estates become large industrial complexes. They're kind of self-sustaining towns with like their labor force in them. And I should also note, I use the term labor force here pretty generously. What I mean is slaves. These are large slave-holding estates.
For sure, yeah.
And over the next 100 years, they basically clear a heap of rainforest to the point where there's about 200 estates, making up about one per square kilometre on the island.
Yeah, I mean, that's the history of the Caribbeans for you.
Yeah, and at its height, St. Kitts and its sugar production is actually the like wealthiest colonial possession for the British. So this is a huge...
Better than Jamaica.
This is... The sugar cane is massive on this island.
But it's so small.
It's so small, and yet it's producing so much sugar cane. And of course, all of these monkeys that have been brought over by the sailors, they find their way into the wild either by just being discarded by the people who are bored of them now, or by escaping. And of course, the monkeys go and do what they do, and their population starts to grow fairly quickly. And because of their proximity to the humans, they tend to eat a lot of the sugarcane.
Very briefly, mm-hmm. I want to like put a little bit more emphasis on how small this island really is.
Yes.
It has a width of 8 kilometers and a length of 29 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all that big. That's 174 square kilometers, and which, I mean, it's nothing. Yeah. It's tiny.
Even more actually than one per square kilometer, basically.
That's crazy.
The monkeys that have got this taste for the sugarcane, very obviously not part of their natural diet.
For sure.
So it's kind of a two-way street of really damaging ecosystems here. And, of course, some of that sugarcane starts to ferment, the stuff that's left over in the field. The monkeys get into that, and they start to get drunk.
So it's not something that's like they have enzymes that turn the sugar into booze in their bodies, but they do find just decaying, fermenting sugarcane.
Okay. At first. And I mean, there are also stories
They
as
start
well,
like, homebrewing.
Well, there's also the stories here of sailors. I mean, and just the people working on these plantations as well, getting a kick out of, you know,
seeing drunk monkeys.
Giving monkeys fermenting molasses, or even just handing them rum, or the monkeys themselves getting into the rum, whether it by accident or whether it be intentional, and just like really seeking out the sweet alcoholic stuff.
Have you ever had a face-to-face interaction with a monkey?
Yeah, I feel like it was in pretty controlled circumstances, though. I haven't been to one of those towns, like or like the monkey temples, where they're just like roaming about.
Yeah, I've never had that either. But my only serious monkey connection, and I do think of it as a connection. When I was a kid, my mom's friend brought over another friend mm-hmm. who had a chimpanzee. A real-life chimpanzee.
What?
I was about 7, 8 years old in rural Estonia. And all of a sudden, a chimpanzee walks into my apartment. And it instantly, like, gravitated towards me. We became friends. We played together. And right before they were about to leave, he actually did, like, climb inside of my sweatshirt and just hugged me really tight. And I never saw that monkey again outside of the news. Apparently, my mom's friend's friend sold it to some early mid-90s celebrities in Estonia.
Okay.
That later, when the monkey came of age and hit puberty, which is the worst
the
age for a chimpanzee.
Mm-hmm.
Like, chimps.
Yeah. They rip your face off.
They'll rip your face off and your dick off, and they rip everything off that they can just, like, grasp. Mm-hmm. And they can grasp everything because they got, like, 5 thumbs, basically.
Does this monkey live at the zoo now?
He was sold to the Moscow Zoo.
Oh.
In, like, the early, mid-90s.
I was really waiting for a punchline. I was waiting for you to just deliver a killer punchline to this, but it turns out this is a story of you actually meeting a chimpanzee.
I really wanted the story to have a punchline, but it's just a story of me falling in love with a chimp.
Who now lives at the Moscow Zoo.
Or probably, presumably dead, because this
is
like
was
30
a long time ago.
Years ago.
Well, these aren't particularly big monkeys. I guess we'll
but I mean,
probably...
Thinking back, I just now want to get drunk with that monkey.
We'll probably have to put up one of these hilarious videos of these little monkeys, but they are quite small. So we're not worrying about chimpanzees, but
no face ripping, no dick ripping.
Since they have been fairly exposed to all of this sugarcane, they start to develop the taste for alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the first big hit for the sugarcane industry on St. Kitts is the emancipation that goes on in the British Empire.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So obviously there is a very drastic reduction in the workforce.
We're talking late 1700s here.
Very late 1700s, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we already start to see a bit of a decline, even this early in the sugarcane industry on St. Kitts. By the late 1890s, there's a huge slump that sees a bit of unrest on the island as mm-hmm. Workers really start to feel the crunch of the industry collapsing. And the colonial government monopolizes the production. So rather than all of these hundreds of little estates that are producing themselves, there is now one mega factory in the main city on St. Kitts. And 30 kilometres of narrow...
And that's government-owned.
This is, owned by the colonial government, or at least run by the colonial government.
How very socialist.
Mm, for a 1890s British colony to be acting.
Yeah.
There's also 30 kilometres of narrow gauge railway connecting the plantations to mm-hmm. the factory. And profitability slowly continues to decline over the next century until right up in 2005.
Why is the profitability going down? Is it alternative sugars? Is it...
So alternative sugars, other estates, other countries that are starting to produce a lot more as well. It's less and less reliance on the British Empire's access to sugarcane.
Mm-hmm.
So while this was able to become enormous at a time when, you know, they didn't have to pay workers.
Yeah.
They could have as many workers as they wanted. They could have as much land as they wanted.
That is all such a nice way of saying slavery.
Well, yeah. So while they could have slaves, they essentially oversaturated themselves.
Sure.
And as time goes on, well, that mm-hmm, the need for that becomes less and less.
Okay, yeah. But it's not that it's like the advent of beet sugar.
No. I mean, beet sugar does play a part in it. That is grown in
completely different climates.
Exactly.
European self-sufficiency type of thing.
Yeah, the world is less and less reliant on British colonial assets to provide it with sugar.
Imperial imports.
Exactly.
Okay.
So as late as 2005, there's a EU initiative to cut sugar prices. And this more or less just puts the final nail in the coffin of St. Kitts' sugarcane industry.
So I'm guessing they pivoted towards rum.
Well, yeah, rum is still pretty big. But with the closure of the sugar plantations, the monkeys are kind of forced out of their mountainous homes surrounding the plantations and make their way down to where the people live.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, where the alcohol is.
Of course.
Because bearing in mind, these monkeys have been... This isolated community of monkeys has been drinking alcohol for hundreds of years at this point.
They're going through like a society-wide withdrawal.
This is now a crisis if you're a monkey on St. Kitts, because your primary source of alcohol that your community has been drinking for so long is now gone.
This is a big problem.
So they turn to bars, restaurants, and tourist resorts.
You know, you've seen Requiem for a Dream,
yes,
right? See the big New York heroin shortage. That was like the basis of the culmination of that movie. Spoilers, you know, sounds like this, but this is
the monkey equivalent of that.
Yeah. I mean, being the method actor that he is, I'm pretty sure Jared Leto would star in the dramatic retelling of this story. Probably get another Oscar for it.
Well, the monkeys are often stealing their drinks, but they're also being fed by tourists who also want to see this spectacle of drunk monkeys. It's as much as a problem as the monkeys are, they are also pretty big money makers for the people around St. Kitts. So there are monkey handlers who are charging for photos for any tourists who get off the ferry.
They got the crank
box. Like there's a guy playing his old-timey crank box while a monkey dances and has the cymbals.
I am guessing animal rights activists are going to put a stop to this very soon.
There was an element of them trying to do that, but I didn't delve too deeply into it. They weren't successful, and it's a bit of a sidebar. But I mean, on that topic, there are incidents of monkeys being chained up in bars as kind of a beckoning for tourists, like come in and see our monkey, which is
come up and see our abused monkey.
Yeah, exactly. Monkeys in cages and chained up.
No, that sounds bad.
There are actually some places that even serve monkey meals, as in meals made of monkey.
You mean like Indiana Jones style monkey brain eating?
No, it's not. It's not the gruesome picture of the. I thought you might bring that up, but no, that's not the one. They call it tree mutton, and it is essentially just monkey meat prepared as any other food would be.
You know, knowing a little bit about how things like the mad cow disease developed, I think eating monkey brain is probably going to be the cause of.
I think a
zombie apocalypse.
I think eating monkey meat. I'm not sure how deep this goes in, but there is a
meat is problematic. Brain is catastrophic.
Brains are like much more. Yeah, I wouldn't eat a monkey brain, but I think I'd also be cautious to eat monkey itself.
Yeah, no, but I think
because there is an element of like how close you can get to cannibalism as well, and because it's the
the principle of it, because it is a very different thing from a human. But you know, the brain chemistry and all of that.
Yeah,
is close.
I mean, don't get the wrong idea here. I have no moral objection to eating a monkey. It's
ooh. All right, dear listeners, let's get Bob cancelled.
What, for eating a monkey? Well, I haven't eaten a monkey. But the point was that I believe
that
it's like prions are the other specific DNA strands.
Precise. Yeah.
And they, the closer you are related to the thing that you're eating, the more likely.
See, that's why I'm saying, like, with the mad cow disease type, the Kreuzberg disease type of thing happening, I feel like there is too much of a chance.
But that's all right, because we're really just going to St. Kitts to look at the monkeys be drunk rather than eat them. So as you can imagine, a lot of
drink
the videos...
with monkeys, fight with monkeys, eat monkeys.
I don't want to fight with these monkeys. There's 60,000 of them, and they're drunk.
You reckon they're, like, well-organized?
They... Well, we're getting to the point of the monkeys. As you can imagine, the videos are pretty chaotic. And we will put some of these up as the monkeys progress in their drunkenness. They start to stumble. They're not as coordinated. As they jump from table to table. They start to flip things. Glasses get shattered. It's all a bit of a mess.
They flip you the bird. They vomit. They miss their Uber.
They fight each other, as you mentioned.
They fall asleep with a cigarette in their hand, or they burn down their apartments.
But as this has been going on for years, it has been observed quite a bit by researchers.
Right.
And there's actually quite a bit of important data that we've been able to gather from watching these monkeys and their behavior while they're drunk. Coming all the way back to what you said at the very start of the episode was that there are these parallels. So first of all, then the most important thing, which as we've probably arrived at by now, is that this is a conscious decision by the monkeys. They are aware of what alcohol is, they know where to find it, and they seek it out.
Yeah,
so none of this is by accident.
Monkeys are smart enough to do it willingly.
Yes.
As are raccoons, I keep saying.
Now, the demographics of the monkeys, there is a small group of monkeys who are sober. They make up about 15 to 20%. So these guys will take little sips or sniffs of drinks, and then they'll gravitate more towards orange juice or soft drinks.
So these are the teetotaling...
These are the teetotaling monkeys.
All right.
And they will still steal drinks from tourists, and they're still looking for very sugary things, but they will consciously avoid alcohol.
They're like the, you know, they take the sip and it's like, this has got booze in it. Ah.
Gotta go for the Coca-Cola.
Yeah, exactly.
The largest group are the moderate drinking monkeys.
So social drinkers.
Social drinkers, exactly. These guys will drink mixes, like cocktails, or they'll drink beers.
Are they into craft beers?
They're into craft beers. They're into whatever beer they can get their hands on.
See, everyone makes fun of me for always bringing up the milkshake IPAs, but I think now is the time to reference them, because if there's going to be a beer, it's like, you know, the milkshake IPA with the banana puree in it. And that's going to be the hit.
And it's the monkey with a beard.
It's
and
the,
a flannelette shirt.
No, I'm guessing it's the monkey that looks like it has a man bun. And then it wants to have your milkshake IPA with mango.
Exactly. Well, they do love the sweet stuff, but you're right, they're social drinkers, so they are observed only drinking in their groups, drinking as a social interaction.
Do they often start drinking like after 6 o'clock, so they have like shifties or something?
Larry, I'm so glad you brought that up. They actually are observed only drinking in the afternoons.
See, how responsible.
Time is an abstract concept to a monkey, has figured out that it shouldn't drink before lunch.
It's got to take care of the kids.
It's got stuff to do. He's a busy
monkey.
And
once like your day's tasks are done, it's time to go down to the pub,
grab
a couple of milkshake IPAs.
Sit with your friends.
That's it. With your friends.
Very often they're also seen as eating alongside their alcohol. So they're also having bar snacks and eating a good dinner.
How very German of them.
These are very, very much the moderate drinking monkeys. The next group is, as we come down the other side of the bell curve, about another 15% of the monkeys are the heavy drinkers. So these guys, they actively seek out undiluted spirits.
So these are the problematic monkeys.
These ones aren't quite the problematic monkeys yet.
So
these
are just not party quite monkeys. The sleeping at the bus station monkeys.
These aren't the ones.
Do a toot of cocaine and drink way too much at the nightclub monkeys.
Yeah, so this group is mostly made up of adolescents.
So
adolescent male monkeys.
A lot of fighting and fucking.
Those two things, but also they're very social. And in the monkey hierarchy of this community, these guys tend to be at the top. So the party monkeys are the hierarchical leaders.
It sounds
of the
very
troops.
Much like, you know, the startup type of thing where the jockeyest, most outgoing, drinkiest cunts are usually at the top.
And finally, as you mentioned, the problematic monkeys, which might actually be our first example of non-human suffering. This is the less funny part of drunk monkeys. About 5% of them are what we would recognize as being essentially non-functioning alcoholics.
Problem drinkers.
They will constantly drink until they pass out, and given enough access, a lot of these monkeys will actually drink themselves to death.
Okay, so it is, again, not an intrinsically human behavior. It is just addiction that is species-wide,
mm-hmm.
that spans multiple like gene pools or like multiple species.
And that's the most interesting part of this. This demographic makeup is more or less exactly what we would expect to see in a group of humans.
I was about to say, it sounds like there's a definite correlation in terms of like the percentages of the total population.
And so that's really valuable research to us because, as you said, it's
what,
not...
Did you say 5%? I don't think...
5% as the very problem. Okay. I mean, within that, a much smaller percent of that 5% are the ones that actually drink themselves to death.
There's
degrees of heavily alcoholic monkey.
But I mean, non-functional alcoholic monkeys.
But as you said, it's a good look into our own behavior by watching this because it even suggests a little bit that, no, it isn't just cultural or environmental. There is actually genetic predisposition to the way that you interact with alcohol. And seeing that this is something that is common across the animal kingdom really supports that that information.
I mean, don't we truly have reference points and proof for two kinds of simians, basically, or like simians in general? The monkeys,
you like the great apes? Is that what you're like, the definition between like the monkey simians and like the great ape simians? The ones that are like us and then the monkeys?
Yeah, and I think this is like all that we have in terms of proof in the animal kingdom where this is a very conscious decision and a very conscious type of pattern of behavior. Because, you know, most of these, getting back to the elephants,
yeah,
they're not going out of their way. They will drink your whatever 500 gallons of rice wine if they stumble upon it, but they're not gonna like rampage in search of the alcohol.
Yeah.
While the monkeys will, while the humans will. Like I think
rampage
it's like
in search of alcohol.
Sort of. I mean,
that's one way of putting it.
Have you heard of crackheads? Like this addictive behavior what makes so many wheels turn in society.
Mm.
And so my whole thing goes back, like, is it intrinsically a mammalian behavior? Because we do have the raccoons and moose, meese and elephants and all that. Or is it a certain level of brain development where addictions
we also need sentience.
Issue? Is it sentience? No. I don't know.
Well, maybe we just have to watch the monkeys get drunk a little bit more.
Bob, what did we learn from one of hopefully many Aesop Rocky's fables to come?